We're getting reaction from Capitol Hill as Russia's war against Ukraine enters its eighth day. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. President Biden, in his State of the Union speech Tuesday night, said Putin is now isolated from the world more than ever, and powerful economic sanctions are taking hold.
Tonight, I say to the Russian oligarchs and the corrupt leaders who bilk billions of dollars off this violent regime, no more.
Do you support the U.S. response to Russia's aggression? How do you want Congress to act? It's 800-642-1234. Republican U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District in the northeastern part of our state serves on the House Armed Services Committee. Congressman Gallagher, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
Well, first, your assessment of the situation as Russia steps up assaults in major cities, explosions continue to rock Kyiv. Can Ukrainian resistance defeat Russia and not topple Ukraine's government?
Well, I think the Russians are going to continue to advance, notwithstanding the very real and inspiring bravery on display by the Ukrainians, whether it's the 13 border guards that, you know, stood up to a Russian warship, whether it's Zelensky himself leading from the front, failing or refusing to leave Kyiv, whether it's some of the pictures of grandmas we've seen picking up rifles to defend their hometowns. It's incredibly inspiring. I think it's stiff in the West, but I just don't think Putin's going to back down. And though his army thus far has failed to achieve a rapid victory that quickly collapses the will of the Ukrainians to fight, and though his occupation of the country is going to be costly and difficult, I fully expect him to continue. I expect him to use even more brutal tactics that we've seen previously on display in places like Aleppo and Grozny. So even in the best case scenario, I fear we're going to be dealing with both a massive humanitarian crisis in Europe, as well as the brutal reality that Putin will at least occupy some significant part of Ukraine, likely Kyiv and other key cities like Kharkiv and Odessa. And that's going to be very difficult. That means he's even closer to NATO's doorstep and in a better position to threaten the Baltic states and Poland. So I don't see this going away anytime soon. That's something we all need to think about, particularly those of us in public office, and draw the right lessons from this crisis going forward.
Well, let's talk about the role of the U.S., and we'll get to the humanitarian crisis in a moment. President Biden, in his State of the Union, announced he'll close American airspace to Russian planes.
And tonight, I'm announcing that we will join our allies in closing off American airspace to all Russian flights, further isolating Russia and adding additional squeeze on their economy.
So this announcement comes after Canada and European nations did the same. Do you agree with this move?
I do agree with the move. And I think you saw the bipartisan support for that on display at the State of the Union. The more controversial issue and what we're kind of arguing about right now in D.C., is the fact that notwithstanding some of the announcements of sanctions, for example, the Biden administration said they're going to sanction the central bank in Russia, and our European allies have taken even more aggressive measures. We've decided to sort of take some Russian banks off the SWIFT international banking transaction system. There's still a massive loophole and exemption for the Russian energy sector that allows them to continue to process payments for energy. European consumption of Russian natural gas has not changed. We are still buying Russian crude. Most people forget as well that Russia is a big producer of coal as well, and coal has actually gone to its highest price in at least a decade. I sort of checked this morning. You might have to check me on that. So the energy sector, if you really want to get serious about imposing economic costs on Putin, the general consensus is that you really have to go after their energy sector. And we're still not doing that, at least in an aggressive fashion, with this massive exemption. And that is due in part to the fear of how that might affect Americans at the pump.
I want to pause right there, because some House Democrats have floated a proposal to end normal trade relations with Russia and the U.S. policy of treating Russia as a most favored nation, remove Russia from the World Trade Organization. In light of these sanctions, how do you feel about that?
Well, President Biden promised to turn Putin into an international pariah. In general, I think that's a good idea. Now, I'd have to look specifically at the bill you've referenced. I haven't seen it, quite honestly. But there are steps we can do to further isolate Russia internationally, reduce the role of Russia in various international fora, the World Trade Organization being one of them. I also think it's a mistake to be relying on the Russians to negotiate with Iran, as we are doing right now in Vienna in an attempt to revive the 2015 Iran deal, because the Iranians refused to negotiate with us directly. That doesn't really add up in my mind. How could we be turning Putin into a pariah while we're also working with him to negotiate with the Iranians? And the State Department spokesman said, well, we will continue to work with Russia on areas of mutual interest, and negotiating over the Iranian nuclear program is one of them. So if they get a deal, are we going to be standing on the stage with Lavrov? Either you're committed to turning Putin into a pariah or you're not. And I am open very much to working with my Democratic colleagues in the House to figuring out creative ways where we can further isolate Vladimir Putin, who's shown that he's a KGB thug and a barbarian. And we'll stop at nothing in order to write his name into the history books, even if he's writing it with the blood of innocent people. It's a very dangerous situation. And so I will go and reach out to my Democratic colleagues who introduced that bill and analyze it. And hopefully we can find a bipartisan path forward. I mean, I was inspired by some of the bipartisan display after the president's remarks. I welcome some of the comments from our German allies about investing in their own defense, figuring out a way to provide lethal assistance to the Ukrainians. But thus far, this has been a lot of talk. We still need to see these words put into action on the ground. And obviously, I continue to disagree with some of my Democratic colleagues about their energy policies, which I fear are playing into Putin's hands right now.
Congressman Mike Gallagher represents Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, covering Green Bay, Fox Valley. You can join in. What would you like to see Congress do to address the Russian invasion of Ukraine? 800-642-1234. In recent days, we have talked with the head of the Wisconsin National Guard, Paul Knapp, said on our program that the Guard currently has troops stationed in Eastern European NATO countries. What is the risk of U.S. troops entering a direct conflict with Russia?
Well, right now, the administration is committed to making sure they don't enter into a direct conflict and there won't be troops on the ground in Ukraine. I don't want to minimize the risk if they're in a nearby country, but if Putin were to attack U.S. troops stationed in a NATO ally country, obviously he'd be escalating dramatically. He'd be crossing the Article 5 provision of NATO, which would trigger our collective defense. And so I doubt he's willing to go that far. That being said, this is a man who threatened the use of nuclear weapons recently and raised his nuclear alert to the second of four levels that they have in the country, which I view as a move just to intimidate NATO, and we must not be intimidated. So these troops will primarily be used, my understanding is, in two ways. One, just to bolster our presence in NATO's eastern front and deter Putin from going further and attacking NATO directly. Of course, Ukraine is not a NATO ally, but as well, logistically, to make sure that we can continue to flow support to the Ukrainians on the ground that are fighting. And I think NATO is fairly united right now in wanting to continue to provide lethal assistance. Somewhat famously now, Zelensky said when offered, evacuation by America from the country, I don't need a ride, I need ammunition. Mm-hmm. And I think our job is to ensure that he has the ammunition he needs in the form of javelins, stingers, body armor, sniper rifles, mines. These are things that can make it very difficult for Putin over the long term. And that is what we must do. So we need to turn this into a quagmire for him, something similar to the way in which the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in 1979, though a brilliant conventional move initially, ultimately turned into a decade-long quagmire that expedited the fall of the Soviet Union. We should be imposing as many costs on the ground on Putin as possible, especially in light of the fact that we now see that the Russian army has significant logistical problems, maintenance problems, resupply problems, and overestimated, or rather underestimated, the will of the Ukrainians to fight.
Getting reaction from U.S. Congressman Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin about Moscow's goal to oust Ukraine's democratically elected government and what the role of the U.S. should be. You can join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Congressman Mike Gallagher here on the Ideas Network. The head of the World Health Organization says it's seeking a humanitarian corridor to be opened to Ukraine since pre-positioned supplies in Kyiv are inaccessible. First shipment of medical supplies arriving in neighboring Poland today. We're getting a reaction from Congress on Russia's war on Ukraine. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. How should the U.S. punish Russia? Do you think the U.S. should supply weapons to Ukraine to battle the Russian invasion? Do you worry about potential cyber attacks on U.S. businesses? 800-642-1234. U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher with us for about nine more minutes. Let's look at the humanitarian crisis. 1 million people now fled across the borders of Ukraine since the invasion started. That's from the UN's top refugee official on Twitter yesterday. The UN estimates 4 million Ukrainian refugees will need protection in the coming months. That's more than two-thirds of the total population of Wisconsin. What should the U.S. do for refugees?
Well, clearly, we're going to have to ensure that the refugees have, you know, the basic essentials. We're going to have to work with our allies to provide food, water, and shelter. I think the broader question is sort of where do these refugees go over the long term? And I'd be lying to you if I said I had an easy answer to that. My hope is that we can draw the line in Western Ukraine and ensure that there's at least, you know, a functioning government in Lviv and a place for Ukrainians to stay within their own country or near their own country. But all of that depends on how much assistance and military assistance we're able to get on the ground in Ukraine and whether the sanctions we're putting in place now have an actual deterrent effect on Putin and whether we're able to amplify some of the dissent that he's experiencing from some of the more powerful oligarchs within Russia, but as well as the dissatisfaction among the Russian people. So it's a very fluid situation. As I said at the beginning of this interview, I fear it's going to get worse. You know, I think the lesson over the long term is just the costs of deterrence failure. I think the fact that we failed to deter Putin, and now we're going to have to spend billions of dollars dealing with this, and tens of thousands of people are going to lose their lives, should be a sobering lesson for us. To me, it's obvious that sanctions alone cannot deter. You know, hashtag diplomacy alone cannot deter. And I think where this lesson really needs to be learned is in a different part of the world, in the Indo-Pacific, particularly when it comes to Taiwan. We know that General Secretary Xi Jinping, who's broadly supporting Putin, they signed a kind of 5,000-word statement of mutual cooperation, saying nothing was off limits, the potential for friendship was endless. His legacy issue, what he wants to do, is invade Taiwan or take over Taiwan, preferably with non-lethal means, but with the military if necessary.
So what is China's responsibility then in this crisis with Ukraine?
I don't think China views itself as having any responsibility. I think the fundamental, beyond the deterrence failure, perhaps the more fundamental mistake we've made leading up to this crisis is what I would call mirror imaging. We think people like Putin and Xi play by the same rules that we in the West do. We think that they respect what we call the international order. They don't. They live in a world where might makes right, where people don't have individual rights, where it's all about the power of the party or the power of Putin himself. And a failure to understand that blinds us, I think, to the truly evil designs of these countries. And so I think China does not view itself as having any responsibilities in this crisis and is focused on continuing to pursue its long-term objective, which is to displace the United States in the Indo-Pacific as well as globally.
Before we move on, I just want to put a finer point here, because you and your colleagues are talking about what size of aid package makes sense for Ukraine. Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia said earlier this week he's heard as much as $10 billion. What is the right amount of humanitarian aid from the U.S.?
Well, the number that was floated this week was a $6 billion package that was mostly military assistance, which makes sense to me. Whether the $10 billion figure is that plus humanitarian assistance, I'd have to check with Senator Kaine, but it is going to be costly. And again, it gets to the point of just how costly and bloody things get when deterrence fails. I was very disappointed yesterday, I'll say. We passed a resolution on the House floor, which I voted for, and I agree with what's in that resolution, and it passed almost unanimously, but it was a resolution. It was just words on a page. It wasn't actually
non-binding,
moving money. Yeah, and it didn't move money or material assistance anywhere near Ukraine. You know, we're 6 months into the fiscal year. We haven't passed a defense budget of our own. I do think the president missed an opportunity in the State of the Union to talk about the need to actually pass a defense budget, because another lesson we have to learn is the need to invest in our own defense. You know, you mentioned something that I think is very important leading into this segment. You mentioned the risk of cyber attacks. I've spent the last 2 years co-chairing a commission on U.S. cyber policy. I can tell you our homeland is vulnerable to cyber attacks. And I do think that if this situation escalates, Putin will not hesitate to attack our critical infrastructure. There's a space where we need to be investing more in our own defense to make us more resilient to cyber attacks. And given the fact that 80% of our critical infrastructure is owned by the private sector, it's an area where the private sector has to step up and work in partnership with a more nimble federal government to defend the homeland. That's how Putin can launch an attack on our own territory. He doesn't need to actually physically cross the border. He can do it with cyber weapons.
Pausing there with Mike Gallagher, represents Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District. Let's take a call now. We have Jerry in Pittsville. Jerry, hi.
Hi there. I got to be honest. I'm almost flabbergasted at our congressman and with the leadership in D.C. in general. We're sitting here. I'm driving down the road in a semi right now. I bust my rear end 50, 60 hours a week, every week, moving stuff this country, and I just listen to these people talk flippantly about 50, 60, 70 million dollars in aid package. Where our country has
and Jerry, you are breaking up as you move in your semi. Jerry, just very concerned, as you can hear, that we are sending so much money. And Jerry had said, why does the U.S. have to be the world police?
That's a great question. And I think it represents the frustration a lot of Americans feel when faced with crisis like this. I just would say, if you look at American history, when we've tried to retreat into Fortress America, when we've tried to tell ourselves that we don't have to invest in our own defense or maintain a forward posture and maintain robust alliances, it's usually resulted in catastrophic world war. That's ironically and tragically forced us to spend more on our defense over the long term. So I actually think the most cost-effective way to make sure we don't waste money is to have a credible deterrent, invest in our defense, invest in lethal allies to ensure that people like Putin don't try something like this, so that we don't have to spend money mitigating the effects. As the old saying goes, problems don't age well. And that's as true in your personal life as it is in geopolitics. Now, I don't know if this is where Jerry was going, but I will say, I do think our counterproductive energy policy, and he said he's driving a truck right now, and the war this administration has waged on domestic energy production, the cancellation of the Keystone Pipeline, which cost us 10,000 Wisconsin jobs, is a needless cost that now Wisconsinites are going to have to bear. High oil prices, what Wisconsin is going to pay at the pump, that's not just due to Putin. That's due to our own counterproductive policy. So that's an area where I think we can do more to alleviate the costs so that Jerry and others don't have to pay for this day to day in Wisconsin. But I just would argue that the more we ignore these problems, you know, whether it's the problem posed by Putin or Xi Jinping, I mean, we're just going to find ourselves dealing with a much greater crisis. Or, and I'll stop here, if we talk about the economic impact of this, I mean, Putin has leverage over the global energy markets, given that, you know, Russia's position, particularly with respect to natural gas. But China has so much more economic leverage. And if we ignore the threat posed by China, they're going to hold us hostage for the next 100 years if they have control of chip production, for example. So, you know, I wish we could just only invest domestically. I just don't think we have that luxury in the modern economy.
Thank you for joining us, Congressman Gallagher.
Thank you.
U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher, Republican from Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, serves on the House Armed Services Committee. News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.